The offseason is almost over, and Ohio State will open its year with a top five matchup for the first time ever. Let's talk about it in this edition of the 11 Dubcast. I'm Andy Vance, along with Johnny Genner, as always. And joining us fresh from the bullpen this week, Chase Brown, the newest member of the Beat team at 11 Warriors. Chase, welcome not only to the Dubcast, your first appearance as an official member of the Cognoscenti, but also welcome to the 11 Warriors family and team. Let's start off, let you get to introduce yourself a little bit to the Dubcast universe. Tell us where you come from and your first connection to Ohio State sports.
Yeah, so grew up in Columbus. I've been a lifelong Ohioan, a lifelong member here of the Central Ohio area. Grew up in Worthington, Ohio, about 10, 15 minutes from campus. As far as my first connection to Ohio State, I'm actually sort of a Buckeye for life, if you'll ride with me in that saying. But my mom actually is the synchronized swimming coach at Ohio State.
Fantastic.
So I've always been
dominant on campus. Also,
I've absolutely right. So I think that while that's not usually something I'll talk about with most people, it's something that the whole 11 Warriors universe will know right off the bat.
Do you have you ever been like involved in synchronized swimming yourself? Like, are you a synchronized swimmer?
Well, here's the thing. So my mom is a synchronized swimming coach. She's synchronized swam, or she was a synchronized swimmer.
Yeah.
Growing up, I mean, she's been in the business. She's been in the sport for her entire life, but I have three older sisters and none of them swam, not nice. Even competitive swimming of nice. Lap pools or diving or anything like that. And then I didn't do any swimming. So it was something where my mom didn't really push us into that space, which I'm both thankful for, but also sort of surprised about, because it seems like somebody with a championship pedigree like her would have wanted us to at least try it, but none of us ever did. Which is always very funny to think about. But yeah, we all got into our own individual sports, our own little niches here and there. And so, yeah, it was just fun. I've always kind of grown up around campus. I decided to go to school there for college, and that's where I pursued a degree in journalism and English at Ohio State. Just recently graduated here in 2022. And throughout that time, it's sort of been developing a familiarity with the journalism career with the Lantern, Ohio State school newspaper, and then was also an employee, a full-time beat writer for Buckeye Sports Bulletin.
Nice.
Before hopping over here to 11 Warriors.
Well, thanks for making our degrees look so much better than they were when we got them, because I know how difficult it is getting Ohio State now. I mean, that's like serious business. At the time, they were just like shooting them out of a cannon. Actually, you know what? I think that's an Onion article where they have everybody go into Ohio Stadium. We'll have to link that in the post, but there's an Onion article where they said they were giving out diplomas by shooting in one of those like t-shirt cannons and then just shooting at people in the stands at Ohio Stadium. I was like, that's pretty good. And also the equivalent of the kind of work that I put in.
We've had that conversation a lot of times, different classmates of mine, you know, could you get into Ohio State today? You know,
yeah,
got in, you know, I matriculated in the fall of, well, more than 20 years ago. And yeah, we will often go around, you know, your test scores, your GPA, you know, would you get in today, basically? Because every year you put out this press release from the university, right, about the incoming class and how it's the smartest, you know, highest test scores, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, class in the history of the university. And yeah, it's kind of a fun game to play. Would you get in? Would you not get in today?
My application to Ohio State was just like a hot dog bun. And then I put in, and then inside the hot dog bun, I put in a bunch of pictures of myself giving the thumbs up, and then like sprinkled it with, you know,
well,
coins and things like that. Like, having, all right, good luck.
Got having speed. Just rewatched the classic Reese Witherspoon film, Legally Blonde, you know, her application video to Harvard Law. I mean,
there you go.
You know,
I'm not that good. I'm not Tracy. I'm not that good.
Chase, growing up the way you did, I'm kind of fascinated by this because you have a very different connection to Ohio State athletics than most people who will ever go into a football stadium. But how did growing up observing that, you know, kind of that intense that intensity that has to go into being a championship caliber program of the type that we're talking about with the synchronized swimming program. Like how did that influence or shade or color your perceptions of sports in general, or even Ohio State sports more specifically?
That's a great question, because I feel like my mom and I have a very similar approach to a lot of the things that we do. And that was most accentuated in sports. She's very analytically driven. She's very knowledgeable about many different things, especially synchronized swimming. And so that sort of mentality was something that I think I took from her, honestly, at a very young age, in the way that I viewed sports. Sports have always been something where I've been fascinated by them. And I can even recall times of my parents telling me at, you know, about 5, 6, 7 years old, I would pick up a copy of the Columbus Dispatch and start reading the box scores for, at the time, the Cleveland Indians games or the Cleveland Browns or the Cleveland Cavaliers, and looking at the Ohio State sports as well, and just wanting to know more about the game within the game. And so I've always sort of had that kind of approach. In some ways it's the best thing in the world. In some things it's the worst thing in the world, because I'm very much in love with the game, but then I also don't really have an affection for, or at least an outward affection for, what's happening in the game. I like to watch sports with a very, I guess, a stoic approach, a stoic personality in a way, where I'm not really jumping out of my seat, cheering, clapping my hands at all, but
Big Buckeye, just, how dare you?
I like to take everything in, and I like to see sort of what's happening and what sort of, you know, strategy is going into the game, and what sort of approach a coach or a player might take in certain scenarios. And I think that's also kind of what drew me to journalism a little bit, is that you don't really need to have that exuberance toward the game, but you can still appreciate everything that's happening within it. But yeah, I just think I grew up with this approach that it was going to be, you needed to be high intelligence and have a high IQ toward the sports that you enjoy, or the sports that you are participating in. And that's kind of the way that I ran with it for a pretty long time.
Okay. Having said that, I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. And I try to reach, I mean, I'm not very smart, but I do try to reach a Zen like approach to the game in general, mm-hmm. in part because, you know, if I'm going to write about it, I've got to try to think about it at least a little bit rationally. And granted, you know, again, I'm dumb, but I try to like think about it in a way that isn't just what I saw and then my base reaction to it. However, there are times when that is unavoidable. And I want to ask you, like, having said what you just said, has there been a moment or times or moments when that went completely out the window and you just lost your mind, either out of anger or joy or spite or whatever?
Absolutely. There's just times where you have to. And I think that that's the beauty of sports. When it comes to sports, whether you're playing them or watching them, as much of an analytical approach as I want to keep, there's just so much brilliance and so much to love about sports that I think you almost have to be emotional about it. Speaking of my mom, we really love the movie Moneyball.
Oh yeah.
And that line in the movie, you know, it's hard not to be romantic about baseball. And I think that that's sort of the way, and almost if it's as much analytical as it is much romanticism for the game, of just falling in love with it. And I can recall several times, especially with Ohio State sports growing up, mm-hmm. although don't tell anybody now, I'm not supposed to be a fan. but sure. Years ago when Ohio State would be playing, like I think about the 2017 game, I believe it was, Ohio State was playing Penn State in Ohio Stadium, and JT Barrett leading Ohio State back in that second half. I think my ears were bleeding listening to Ohio Stadium explode as JT Barrett led that comeback, as JT Barrett scored again and again and again. And there's moments like that where you just feel connected to the 100,000 other people that are sitting in the stadium. And there's nothing else that's quite like that. Like nobody gets that excited about any other, you know, thing to do, any other hobby, any other thing of interest. And so I think that's what makes sports so amazing, is that you can be connected to those many people or to that specific thing or whatever it is. It just is so beautiful that you can kind of have that connection with other people, and then that connection within, you know, the way that you approach watching the game as a fan.
I wanted to, you know, think about this in now the context of, we're going to shift gears from getting to know you to putting you on the clock as the newest member of the Beat Team at 11 Warriors. It is officially kind of our season preview week. The next couple weeks we'll be previewing the season to come, leading up to that number 2 versus number 5 matchup between Ohio State and Notre Dame. First time Ohio State's had a top 5 matchup in opening week in school history, which kind of, that in and of itself blew my mind a little bit, that little factoid. But when you look at a game of that magnitude, as you're listening to coaches and the captains and other players that you've had a chance to listen to at the press events here during fall camp, what's that kind of juice? How is that coming through the voices that you and the other members of the team are hearing when you go to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center? Is it business as usual, or is there a little extra juice on this one with the stakes at play?
I think it's a little bit of both. It seems that the players and coaches are very much looking forward to this first game with everything that's riding behind it, but they're not going to let you know the full extent of how much they want to play this game because they almost have to. It's Ohio State. It's every game is important. And, you know, you heard Ryan Day talk about it at the Big Ten media days. You know, an 11-2 season with a Rose Bowl win is good for most programs, but it's not good for Ohio State. And the expectation for Ohio State is that they go undefeated, that they win the Big Ten championship, that they make the college football playoff, and that they win a national title. That's pretty much the ceiling at other programs, but that's kind of the floor in a lot of ways for Ohio State. It's one of the few programs where a national championship is within reach every season, and it's almost expected by the fans. And that's sort of the way that the players and coaches are talking about it, is the urgency that they need to win this football game. But there is sort of a little bit of more juice behind it. It's not just one of the other 12 regular season games that they get to play. It does have a lot behind it. And I think that Notre Dame, because of its tradition, because of how respected a program it is, they know that they need to take it a little bit more seriously, and they know that they need to have a little bit more prepared in each practice and a little bit more prepared week to week to make sure that they get a W in this game.
One of the things that I've really thought about is how, you know, you've seen this, and how coaches and players kind of prep us, and by us, I mean fans and the media, for the upcoming season. Do you think that this is different this season? Do you think there's any tea leaves that we can read, I guess, in terms of how they're trying to present it? Or is this maybe a bit more honest than what we've been used to in general, just under Ryan Day, in terms of where they think the team's at?
It seems like they have a good understanding of Notre Dame, but yeah, they don't necessarily have a good understanding of themselves yet. Mm-hmm. Maybe not for the on-field product in terms of production, but a lot of what you've heard from the coaching staff and from some of the players has been the lack of leadership that was present last season, specifically when it came to those losses against Oregon and against Michigan. And then even as you heard in the first half of that Rose Bowl game against Utah, it took a halftime speech, some sort of, you know, momentum building speech from players like DeMario McCall and others to really rally up and like bring the troops together to go win that football game. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like maybe they're trying to figure that out still. I think they made a couple of really good selections when it came to their captains, and it was really evident that they trust those players to lead the locker room, you know, all of them except for CJ Stroud, who received the most votes, regardless, was an Iron Buckeye. So all of them had done the work in the offseason to really prove that they belonged and prove that they should be up on top as the people that other players will look toward. But that's just what it seems to me, is that they're just looking for leaders. And they're trying to figure out, you know, who can they trust? That first game is not going to be something easy where they can send out the backups in the second half. Like, you need to have everything together and everything in order to beat Notre Dame. even though they're favored by so much, you're not favored by that much because of the leadership qualities. You're favored because of the talent you have on the field, but that talent won't perform the way it's supposed to if there's not leadership.
Right.
It's the thing I think always just blows my mind that you sort of, I think, as a outsider, if you will, or as a fan watching on television or even in the stadium, it's kind of unfathomable to you that at that level with that much talent, that there's still that variable of leadership. That how do you not, when you talk about like having to get the DeMario McCall speech to get him up, like how do you have to have that level of motivation when you're that good at the sport? You know, I think it's really hard for the average person maybe to envision being in that situation. So to hear the players talk about it, and then how they feel they're maybe better prepared, I guess, from a leadership standpoint this year. I'd say if I was another Big Ten program, I might be a little nervous hearing that they're more confident than they were last year, because it was a pretty good ball club last year, all things considered. Listening to Kevin Wilson Monday talk about getting up on the wall, as he put it, talking about getting that national championship, you could tell he's hungry. Do you sense that those leaders you talked about and the players on the field share that same hunger? And if it is national championship or bust, are they able to ride that kind of hunger through a grueling regular season and into the postseason? I mean, that's a tall order with a huge margin for error.
Right. I think that we'll find out on September 3rd. If I can use that answer as a cop-out, it just sort of seems like that's the benchmark for Ohio State to figure out what kind of team they have. Because after that Notre Dame game, you get a couple of, I guess what we would call cupcakes. You know, they're playing Arkansas State, they're playing Toledo, which are games that you're probably going to see a bunch of the backups. And then you get into the Big Ten schedule. But that game, while it's not going to break the season, it can really make the season in a lot of ways, because you're going to find out which of those players are legit and which of those players prepared the way they were supposed to in the offseason. And so I think that they all have national title aspirations, and that they've been speaking as if that is the expectation. But expectations can be expectations. You know, it's not all going to, you know, it doesn't matter until they show up on September 3rd and play against Notre Dame and that season kicks off.
Am I crazy and not being at all worried about that game? I mean, and maybe I don't feel like I'm that crazy just because of all the injuries that Notre Dame has. I think they're going to wax them. I think the biggest problem that they're going to have, that they're going to have to kind of deal with and get their head in order, is like after they get past, as you mentioned, after they get past Notre Dame, it's, I don't know, keeping their head in the game, keeping focus, to me feels like that's going to be the bigger difficulty for a team that's going to have some new players and leadership roles, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, am I nuts in saying that?
I don't think so. And I do think the biggest thing here, and I agree, I think that Ohio State will have no problem with Notre Dame once it shows up in that game. It just will maybe be a matter of, are they as good as people think they're going to be? You know, I think that they'll win. I think that they'll win maybe by a touchdown or two, maybe more. But what is that margin to where people start to see Ohio State almost immediately, the first game of the season, as a team that's good or a team that's great? Could they win so handily that there is going to be no other option but for the AP and the coaches poll to have Ohio State as number one the next week? Or are they going to look at Ohio State's performance and still see Alabama as the, you know, the champion sitting on its pedestal, you know, all the way up there on its throne, as the team to beat? You know, Ohio State could potentially prove itself as the team to beat immediately. And then through the Big Ten schedule, even more so. And I think that's just kind of the reality of the game. You have a top five matchup. It's, you know, it's where all the eyes are going to be on that Saturday night. It's just how much can they perform, or how much can they almost outperform the expectations that people have set from them already?
There's a quote I heard some years ago that I think applies. It's something to the effect of, you can't win a championship in September, but you can lose one. And this game feels like that to me. You know, of course you could go back to the Virginia Tech game in 14 to kind of disprove this theory. But this is one of those kind of games that if Ohio State wins it, there's still that, what you just described, that well, Alabama is the team to beat, depending on how well Ohio State handles Notre Dame. On the other hand, you know, if they don't look great, right, then, or God forbid, they wouldn't win the game, which I'm with Johnny, I'm kind of expecting Ohio State to win it running away. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different narrative entirely, to borrow an overused line that conspiracy theorists enjoy. I want to peel this onion apart a little bit and start talking about the different units on the field and have you give your insights and perspective, having been covering this team here through fall camp. One thing that I heard Kevin Wilson say that kind of piqued my curiosity is how he feels about Ohio State's short yardage run game. Was I alone in thinking, oh, really? When he said that, because that was an area where I kind of expected, particularly with a guy like Mayan Williamson on the roster at running back, that Ohio State should be, you know, not terrible in that space. Is that an indicator that we shouldn't be expecting Ohio State's quarterback to punch it in anytime soon?
Well, that comment did come as a surprise to me as well. It seems like the offensive line has been praised pretty much so far in fall camp. I think that most people have the understanding that maybe last year's four tackle offensive line experiment wasn't as effective as initially planned or as it might have looked on paper.
That was maybe suboptimal to some extent.
I think so. And so when you insert Donovan Jackson and Matthew Jones on the interior, you know, having Paris Johnson Jr. at left tackle, DeJuan Jones at right tackle, and Luke Whipler at center as your three returning starters, even though that's to say that Matthew Jones has starting experience and Donovan Jackson is no slouch. He comes in as one of the top rated prospects in his class. And it was surprising to hear Wilson have those comments today, talking about maybe some of his concerns with those short yarded situations. I don't know how much to really read into it, though. You know, I do agree. You're talking about Mayan Williams as someone who has really proven that he can run downhill. It seems that Ryan Day really made an emphasis last year for Travion Anderson to become more comfortable with those 2 to 3 yard rushes before he can break out and be the home run hitter that he has always been here at Ohio State. So I'm just kind of curious to see how that might play out in the first couple of weeks of the season. Maybe, you know, Kevin Wilson is interested in seeing more of a push from that offensive line up front. Maybe he's talking more about the running backs, not seeing the holes that are being created. So there's a lot of equations or a lot of pieces to that equation that could be at play here. And I'm not sure yet what he might be referring to. It could be the offensive line. It could be the running back. It could be maybe what you're saying about CJ Stroud needing to get a yard or two on a quarterback sneak. Would they have enough confidence and faith to do something like that? So I think just looking at those equations and looking at the pieces of them, I guess we'll find out here soon.
I actually want to talk about confidence a little bit. And this is another question that I've been kind of trying to think about over the past couple of weeks, just because, you know, when you're trying to talk about a team and you're maybe you're just a casual viewer of football or whatever you're turning on, you're looking for certain guys who on the defense specifically, who do you have the most confidence in going into the season? And maybe, I mean, let's say you say Denzel Burke or whatever, but like, is there anybody, especially at a critical position, like maybe linebacker or something like that, where you're like, okay, this guy may not be, you know, an All-American, but he's going to be solid and you don't have to worry about that specific position during the season?
All indications through fall camp so far have that answer being Tommy Eichenberg.
Okay.
It appears to me that the Ohio State defense and the coaching staff, those players, they think that Tommy Eichenberg has really become a leader of that unit since the Rose Bowl. That was sort of a rebirth of sorts for Tommy Eichenberg as a linebacker for the Buckeyes. I mean, at 17 tackle performance, he's finding a way to get his hat on the ball and finding his way into those scrums to get an extra half tackle or to get a solo tackle.
So I want to interrupt you real quick, because yeah, I've heard that as well, right? Like, and what people have reported on, what we've put out there on the site, Tommy Eichenberg seems like the dude. How do you explain that, though, to a very skeptical fan who might go, what the hell are you talking about? Like, yeah, he had a ton of tackles in the Rose Bowl, and had a great game and all that, but also getting a lot of opportunities to get tackles because of how the defense as a whole was playing. Mm-hmm. What if they're like super skeptical about this guy right now?
Well, I would say that he has become a leader of that defense in more ways than one. Because he was an Iron Buckeye, he's somebody that the coaching staff trusts, somebody that worked extremely hard in the offseason to improve his body, to improve his athleticism, but then also the way that the players around him are talking about his leadership from a vocal standpoint, the way that he's picked up on Jim Knowles's new scheme. And you know, Jim Knowles is receiving a ton of praise from his players for being one of the smartest people in the room wherever he goes. And the kind of scheme that he's inserting for the Ohio State defense, it's taken some time for a lot of those players to pick up on it and to really receive it and to then apply it into their games. But from day one, it seems that all of the players on Ohio State's defense have pointed to Tommy Eichenberg as someone who studied it and picked it up immediately and is able to direct people in the spots they need to be, not only at linebacker. You know, he's directing the defensive line, he's directing the defensive backs, and he's really taken control and become a captain of that defense in his, you know, his vocality, but then also in the ways that he's leading from a physical standpoint as well.
Nice. You talked about Jim Knowles and his scheme. I thought it was interesting. He described his defense this way. He said, "I don't want fans to know what defense we're in before the snap. That'd be a good way to describe it. We want to be simple, but multiple." It, in a way, it reminded me, and I've used this analogy before. I used to talk about Dick LeBeau as a defensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, and that it would take guys a while to get acclimated to his system because it was so, it was such an intensive system. You had to know so much, like the knowledge of the playbook had to be so in depth. And in hearing people talk about the Jim Knowles system, I've wondered how much time does it really take these guys to get acclimated? And hearing you describe that, do you have any concerns that guys are going to be out there September 3rd and you're going to get to wondering, are they lost or confused because of the complexity of the system?
In some ways, yes. But I think what, you know, overtakes that thought for me is almost Ryan Day's philosophy of his players not needing to act, but his players needing to react. It basically a concept of his players in years past have acted in ways on the football field, specifically defensively, I'm talking, that they are supposed to be in a spot. So they go to that spot, and it's very mechanical, and it's very, you know, if a defensive back is supposed to be in zone coverage, they're only going to go in the zone that they're responsible for, and they won't react to what's happening on the offensive side of the ball. But what Jim Knowles is preaching and what Ryan Day is echoing is that you need to react. It doesn't matter if you're supposed to be in this specific spot. You should be there, right? But if you see that the offense is showing something different and you're the person that's called upon to make a play, then go make the play. And that's what Jim Knowles wants, is to have 8, 9, 10 players in the camera frame, if you're watching on TV, around the ball carrier or around the player that makes the reception, because those people were able to recognize what the offense was doing and go and make the play where it's supposed to be made. And I think that's what impresses me the most, is that these players aren't necessarily acting within that scheme entirely, but Knowles is prepping them with so much information and so much knowledge of the game that they're able to move out of it and react to what's happening on offense and make a play.
So do you think, I mean, obviously that requires, I mean, we were talking about Tommy Eichenberg, that requires leadership and people who can kind of run everything. Do you think, I've thought about this too, and you know, we talk about continuity with the off, like the staff in general, and what the scheme looks like offensively, defensively. And it, to me, it's always felt like Ryan Day really values teachers, if that makes sense. And so you've got a guy like Jim Knowles who has this scheme, has a lot of information that he expects his players to absorb. To get a player to that point, I think, especially in a short period of time, requires some really high level teaching. I mean, you've got to be able to convey those concepts really, really well. What is that approach? Like, how do you do that? How do you go from one system, one approach to something completely different? And how do you set up players to be successful when you're asking them to do something that requires them to A, do something that they haven't, you know, been taught before, and B, you know, absorb a lot of information to try to execute that.
But to use the word in continuation with the alliteration, I would say one voice. You know, you have one system, you have one set of players, but then you need one voice that really rallies them all together. And I think the way that Ryan Day has spoken about Jim Knowles has been that he's the head coach of the defense.
Right.
And I think that Ryan Day was almost a little bit frustrated last year that he had to care so much about the defense. Like Ryan Day, he is a fantastic head coach. He's everything that Ohio State needs him to be, but he really doesn't want to coach the defense all that much. He wants to game plan and scheme for the offense because that is what allowed him to step into this position at Ohio State. It was his genius creating an offensive scheme and finding the right talent to fit that offense. And so I think last year when those defensive problems came and Kerry Combs kind of took a backseat role while they sort of collectively all coached the defense, it just kind of left them in a bad place where there were too many voices. There were too many people giving their input as to what should be happening, as to, you know, what sort of defense they should be running and what sort of plays they should be running against certain teams. But Jim Knowles comes in and he's one voice. You know, he has one idea, he has one mindset, and that's sort of being adopted by the players overall, like across the entire roster, not just the defense, but also the offense. That was one of the things that was so prevalent about today's press conferences with the tight ends, was that they were very, very adamant that the defense has improved, and they were very, very impressed with how much the defense has picked up under Knowles and what he's taught them and what he's left with them. It seems like, you know, all signs are pointing to that defense trending in the right direction. And a lot of that has come from one singular voice teaching the defense and leaving behind tons of knowledge for them to pick up on.
And Kevin Wilson, coming back to that, really sung the praises of the defense. He talked about their presence quite a lot. I love it. He said, it's a long way to go, but I'm sure Coach Knowles will tell you that. But man, out there, it's a dadgum fist fight, which I loved. Was my favorite quote of camp. And in hearing Wilson talk about that presence and that it's a fight out there every day with this defense, you know, is heartening. The question I suppose I have, you know, getting it down to the brass tacks, is do they have enough bodies in the secondary to make this thing work? I'm not so much worried about the front end, but do they have enough horses in the back end to really carry this off?
It's probably my biggest concern for Ohio State heading into this season. You know, first opportunity we had to speak with Ryan Day during fall camp, Dan Hope, a member of our team, asks Ryan Day, hey, you know, we're looking at the depth chart, we're looking at the roster. I should say roster because we never get a depth chart, but you know, we have the roster here and it looks like Jake Seibert is listed as a cornerback. Is there anything to that? And Ryan Day answers and says, yeah, you know, he's still going to work on his kicking, but he's going to be helping us out in the secondary. And, you know, he played cornerback in high school and we think that he has some talent to still do it. And everyone on the beat's kind of looking around and it's a head scratcher. It's like, why do you need a person who you recruited to be a kicker to help out in your defensive backfield? And then you see Jair Brown loses his black stripe and you think, man, that's really cool. Like, congrats, like great job for him. But then you realize part of that is because Jordan Hancock has been down with an injury and Jair Brown has had more opportunities and he's taken advantage of them. But the only reason he had more looks was because Jordan Hancock has been injured. And so you start seeing there's a little bit more writing on the wall to some of these things that might be, you know, good in some sense, but you look at it and you kind of go a little bit closer, you zoom in with the camera lens a little bit, and you realize that there might be some more problems here, especially with the depth in the secondary, than we initially realized.
Depth is definitely something that, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of talk about as they go through the season, and can Ohio State handle all that? It's going to be an interesting, you know, just looking at the schedule and the way the big games are kind of spaced out, depth, attrition, all that kind of stuff is going to be an interesting thing. Do you think that sans CJ Stroud, this is a team And again, I don't want to project CJ Stroud getting injured, but I'm just saying, sans CJ Stroud, is this still a team that can compete for, like, even, you know, a national title? Or is he, like, he is the critical component that has to stay healthy?
That is a fantastic question that I haven't thought about before this point. You know, you'd like to think that Kyle McCord and Devin Brown give you the capability to win a national championship, mm-hmm. right? Because those guys, either of them, are going to be the quarterback next season.
Right.
You know, and you start to look at it and you think, man, like, could they elevate this team in the way that CJ Stroud elevates this team? And right. and right now, I'm not sure. Right now, I would probably say that without CJ Stroud, this team isn't going to win a national championship. Maybe they could get there, but CJ Stroud is a Heisman Trophy finalist in his first season as a starter, right? In 2021. I don't think you would say the same thing about Kyle McCord. And I don't think you would say the same thing about Devin Brown, just from what we know right now. But I think that if you had either of those guys in as the quarterback right now approaching the season, you would have that mentality that Ohio State should be the favorites to win the Big Ten championship. Could they make the playoff? Maybe. If they do, they might win that first game, but I don't see them winning a national championship over a team like Alabama, or even maybe a team like Georgia, Clemson, Notre Dame, those top five teams. That all kind of just comes down to quarterback play at the end of the day. That's the big man on campus. He's the one that has to have the ball in his hands on every play for the offense. And I think CJ Stroud is the guy that, you know, everybody wants at quarterback, and he's the guy that Ohio State needs if they want to win a championship.
Yeah. And the reason why I asked that question is because obviously with Ohio State's most recent national championship, you had a situation where, you know, a guy came in and really, like, a critical point, because he had to, because of the injury to the starter, and the rest of the team was able to kind of step up. Clearly their depth overall was such that they could wait till he kind of got up to speed. Now, yeah, they lost an early game, but they kind of came together, and the full talent of the team was such that, you know, they could lose that dude and then bring in a third guy, and then it still ended up, you know, being successful for them. And then I think about Georgia last year, where you've got one part of their team that is just so unbelievably dominant that you don't necessarily need excellence on the offensive side of the ball all the time. And you can still, like, have a team that talent-wise, scheme-wise, whatever you want to call it, is capable of winning a national championship. I'm kind of with you. I think that CJ Stroud is a critical component of the team, because I don't know that the rest of them, and maybe you'll be proven wrong, right, as they actually start to play. Maybe their defense is all rolled and it's like a Jeff Hafley situation where they're best in the country, you know, just automatically. But I don't know that the team as a whole is so good that they can weather him not being there. And I think that's interesting, because I would think that Ryan Day, as much as he, you know, I'm sure loves CJ Stroud and what he brings to the team, would like the rest of the team to be able to sustain that kind of loss if they had to.
Right.
So it's just interesting to me. It's because the talent on the team is enormous, but it just feels like it's not as cohesive as it might have been in 2014 in certain ways.
Right. And you heard Ryan Day talk about that last year, at the start of fall camp, before naming CJ Stroud the starter. He kept saying this again and again. He kept saying, we're going to need all of them. We're going to need all the quarterbacks. Yeah. If CJ Stroud, you know, even though I'm sure he knew at that point that Stroud was going to be the starter, he kind of kept an open mind that, like, if Stroud doesn't perform to the level that maybe he thought he was capable of, then they were going to need McCord, or they were going to need Jack Miller. And I don't, you know, you don't hear him saying that this season, because, you know, Stroud's the for sure guy, and right. they're not expecting him to get injured. But I do wonder if he has that same mentality, as, you know, if Stroud were to go down, does he have the same approach that we're going to need all of them, that you're going to need Kyle McCord, you're going to need Devin Brown, and those guys have to be ready. Yeah, but I still think that I would say that Stroud is the guy that wins you that championship. You know, McCord might be able to get you there. McCord might get you close. Same thing with Devin Brown. But I think that Stroud, and the way that he performs on the field on a consistent basis, is what makes this team a national title contender.
Well, let's finish up this segment of the Dubcast with that. It's time to put you on the hot seat. Your predictions for the season, based on what you have seen and everything we have just talked about, What's Ohio State's record look like at the end of the regular season? Do they win the Big Ten championship? Do they go to the playoffs? And if so, do they bring home all of the cheddar?
I think yes to all those questions. I think Ohio State has all the pieces on offense to contend for a national championship and to win it. The real question marks just come with that defense. And even if that defense is at a respectable level, to the standards of what Ohio State's defense should be, probably as a top 25 defense. That's kind of all I'm expecting right now from Ohio State defensively, because I think that's really all that we should expect. I know that Ryan Day has said top 10. I know that Jim Knowles has said top five. But this defense, it has a lot of work to do if the Buckeyes want to win a national championship this season. And from what I'm hearing right now from these players and from this coaching staff, I have enough confidence to say that they will be respectable enough to allow the offense to flourish and to allow this team to win football games. I think their really only roadblocks come against Notre Dame. I think there could be some challenges, some tests with Wisconsin and Michigan State, and Penn State's a road game, but it's not a whiteout, so that's not really a trap there. And then with Michigan at the end of the season, but I don't expect that Ohio State will really have too much of a challenge with those teams because they're able to score the ball at such a high rate. And I think that will be the case all season, that even if the defense has its challenges and has its slip ups, that the offense will be able to overcome with Stroud, with Trayvon Henderson, with Jackson Smith and Jigba and all those guys.
I have been on the record all off season long as saying, all this team needs is for its defense to suck 30% less than it did last year. And it is a championship caliber team. So you are giving me some confidence that this defense sucks 30% less than it did last year.
And I think that's a great number. And I think that's a great expectation to set for this defense. Now, I don't want, Ohio State fans to come into my mentions on Twitter and say, you said this defense was going to be this. You said this defense was going to be great. I think it can be. I don't know if it's going to be immediately. I don't know if they're going to show you that it's going to be the number one defense, a Georgia caliber level defense from last season immediately in week one. But I do think that as the season goes on and you see these guys sort of get their feet wet with live game action in Jim Knowles' defense, that you'll be able to see the trajectory that this team is headed on fairly quickly. And you'll get to see some magic happen with CJ Stroud at the quarterback, Trayvon Henderson developing into a second year player, and Jackson Smith and Jigba being the player that we all saw last year, now is the focal point of the offense.
Well, and let's be real. The very first time that Notre Dame, God forbid, scores a touchdown, the people will be out there in mass calling for firings and or, people to be burned in effigy on the Oval or something. Like people get into their feelings during Ohio State football games. So if the final score isn't like 100-0, someone, will have to pay the price for that. But that's part of the reason I got my hackles up a little bit when coach is like, I wish you'd have said top five. Because I'm like, no, you don't need to be top five to win a championship with this offense. Like that's where I keep coming back to, like, just suck a little less than you did last year and things are going to be fine.
That's right. We need Jim Knowles to come out, guys, just be slightly better. That's our goal.
I mean, you don't have to have the 85 Bears to win a title with this offense. That's all I'm saying. So I'm glad we could all be more or less on the same page with that.
Yeah.
Chase Brown, welcome to the 11 Warriors team. Welcome to the Dubcast. You will be filling in for one of the two of us any day now. I predict it. You've passed your first test. And I would say you have also given us good impetus that at some time in the not so distant future, we're going to have a certain synchronized swimming coach on the Dubcast. I just have now got that on my bucket list of people that I want to interview. So, we may have to call in a favor at some point to help make that happen.
She's always available. Part of my goal here at 11 Warriors, I think, is to give more of a platform to a lot of those Olympic sports.
Yes.
I know, Andy, that you and I have shared many a times.
Yes.
Experiences covering wrestling at Ohio Absolutely. State. And that's one of my favorite sports to cover, mostly because Tom Ryan is one of the most interesting interviews of all time. It's just amazing. And yeah, I think that, you know, you look at the reaction, or I see the reaction that you both have toward synchronized swimming at Ohio State. You guys understand its success. But I don't know if all of Ohio State's fans know the success of synchronized swimming. And then to say the success of wrestling, the success of men's and women's soccer, of men's and women's lacrosse. And I think that that's part of the goal I have here at 11 Warriors, is to give a big platform to those sports, because there are so many tremendous athletes that play for those programs and that are looking to, you know, be successful and to bring championships home in their respective sports. So yeah, again, thank you for having me. Thank you for
you're at the right place, because one of the things that has struck me in my long association, first as a reader of the site, is that the passion that the ownership and management of this fine organization have for getting those non-revenue sports, to borrow the oft-used phrase, a little bit of the respect they deserve. It's hard to cover 30 some varsity sports anywhere near as well as you and your colleagues cover football and basketball, but to be able to expose the fan base to the really amazing things that are happening throughout the different programs in the department, I absolutely am on board with that. And yeah, you and I share a passion for that. So glad to have another, we're not alone in that on this team for sure, but glad to have another person who shares that passion. So thanks for joining us on the Dubcast, and we'll look forward to having you back again in the future.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
All right, friends, we are on the cusp of the season, as we indicated. And, you know, one of the great things about football season is going through your closet and pulling out some of your favorite vintage Ohio State threads. Well, if you don't have your favorite vintage Ohio State threads anymore, or maybe if you're like me and some of your favorite vintage Ohio State threads are a little snug around the middle and don't fit quite the way you remember them, have I got news for you. The Dubcast is sponsored by Home Field, premium collegiate apparel brand out of Indianapolis that not only produce incredibly comfortable, officially licensed apparel, but they're adding a new school to their roster of schools starting this week. Home Field will be launching its Ohio State collection August the 20th, that is this week, at noon Eastern. I had a chance to take a look at them, and I'm going to tell you, I kind of geeked out a little bit at some of the vintage Ohio State t-shirts, hoodies, crew necks. It felt straight up vintage, stuff that I had back in the day that I wish was still in my closet.
Yeah, man. That's the thing. Like, sometimes it's hard to find some of those things where you're like, oh God, I wish I still had a version of that. Or, you know, God, I'm sorry. How could my have pit stains destroyed this incredible shirt? Well, now you have the opportunity to maybe get some of that back. So I think it's pretty great. And they're an awesome company, a lot of great brands in there, a lot of great schools that you can peruse, and Ohio State's going to be part of that.
Yeah, I would absolutely encourage you. August the 20th at noon Eastern, they'll be launching it. And new customers can get 15% off your first purchase from Home Field with the code 11Warriors. 11, all spelled out, 11 Warriors at checkout at homefieldapparel.com. Go check it out, because you're going to love some of these really vintage threads. 17 pieces of apparel in the Ohio State collection dropping this week. Thanks to Home Field for sponsoring this edition of the Dubcast. The promo code 11 Warriors at homefieldapparel.com. Off to Ask Us Anything we go. Johnny, what do we find in the mailbag this week?
Well, we want to remind you that you can ask us literally anything by sending us a question to dubcast@11warriors.com. So let's start here with Timbo. What is the best day trip within the state of Ohio? Bonus points if you include food recommendation, extra credit if they're kid/family friendly.
You know, the easy one probably, and the one this is why it propped into mind first, is the Hocking Hills. Yeah. And it's because there's so much to do there, just a variety of things. If you're into canoeing, you're into biking, you're into hiking, you know, anything really outdoor, you want to go on down to, you know, Wayne National Forest. There's some ATV trails down there. You want to get mm-hmm. off road a little bit, places to stay. You know, I know we were talking about day trips, but you go down there, the number of different cabins and Airbnbs and things, if you want to make it a weekend kind of staycation kind of deal. And there's some great food down there. If you go down that 33 corridor, now I haven't eaten there yet, but there's a, I'm trying to remember what the name is. You can see it from 33. It's, I feel like, something River Barbecue, big new place.
There's,
and
Stone? There's Millstone.
Millstone. That's it. That's the one. I haven't eaten there yet, but the number of people in our social circle who have and who swear by it leads me to believe that'd be a great place to eat. So I'm big on Hocking Hills in general. We like to just go down there and go hiking some of the cool places that you can go and explore. Part of it is because that reminds me of home, because I'm a Southern Ohio kid. So I spent my weekends, just trudging around the woods at home on the farm. And so a lot of that is terrain and so on that feels like home to me. So that would be one of my favorites. What about you?
No, I think I'm just going to go with what you said. And I have been to Millstone a couple of times and I think it's pretty legit. I wouldn't say it's the best barbecue I've ever had, but you get a lot of stuff for your buck and it's good. It's really good. So, I would say a day trip, go down there, check out, Ash Cave, check out Old Man's Cave. And then on your way back, hit up Millstone. I think that's a heck of a day. There's also there's some mini golf on the way down. It's a good trip. It's a really fun trip. And I think that's one of the most beautiful parts of Ohio.
It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it's great. So I think that's a great answer.
And I probably, I suppose I just set aside the fact that you can go either north or south from Columbus a couple hours and go to a great roller coaster park in either Cedar Point or Kings Island. Those are kind of day trips that we did when I was kid. We had season passes to Kings Island a few years, not every year, but a few years we did. And those are great. I would also say this is not so much a day trip, but I always like Kelly's Island. I used to go up there and maybe rent like a room in a bed and breakfast, an actual B&B, not just an Airbnb, and drive around with a little golf cart. Put Bay is a little more you're going to like specifically get schlobber knockered, but Kelly's Island was more a little more laid back than that for me. It's again not really a day trip. That's a place you probably want to go up and stay for the weekend, but
yeah,
I like it up at the lake.
I agree. So this next one here, we've talked about this, but I'm curious. So this is from Kevin, who wants to know, not that Kevin, but a Kevin, what are some other podcasts that you listen to? And let me ask you this, is there anything that you've like started to listen to recently podcast wise?
No, I haven't added anything new to my repertoire lately. My two favorite podcasts, and I'm assuming this wasn't specific to sports or Ohio State or anything along those lines. Because my two favorite podcasts are not sports specific, but my absolute favorite is Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History. Absolutely love that podcast. Now it's more of kind of an episodic, he does, 6, 8, 10 episodes per season. So you're not just getting a new one every week of the year, unfortunately, but it's such a well-produced podcast that I get why he's not dropping one every single week. The other one that is coming out every week that is delightful is Freakonomics Radio, hosted by a guy named Stephen Dubner. And it plays off the book of the same title, Freakonomics, which I love that book. That came out, probably 20 years ago now. And they've just done that podcast forever and a day. And it's always really, really good. It's stuff, the name is Freakonomics, but I don't want you to think that it's an economic podcast. Sometimes they talk about economics or policy or things like that. But there was one time, for example, they interviewed a lady who's trying to shake up the funeral industry and, asking questions like, well, why do we spend $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to put our carcass in the dirt in a lead-lined vault and, so on and so forth? Like, why don't we do this instead? Or why don't we do that? And so there's both really good kind of podcasts that get you thinking about things that you're probably not thinking about otherwise.
So here's the thing. I'm not a big podcast guy. I really don't listen to a bunch. However, I remembered this one incident on Conan O'Brien's podcast, which is one of the most popular podcasts, I guess, in the world. It's big time stuff. It's called Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. And I've listened to a few episodes and I think they're pretty funny because I'm a huge fan of Conan O'Brien. But there was one moment in a recent episode, recent-ish episode, I guess, where he had Paul Rudd on. And I don't know if people know this, but Paul Rudd had an ongoing joke with Conan O'Brien that every time he would go onto the show, he'd say he'd have a clip of, whatever movie he was promoting or whatever. And it was always the same clip from the 80s movie Mac and Me, where a kid in a wheelchair like tumbles over a cliff.
Oh,
and then it lands into a ravine, like a water filled ravine. And then this like horrible puppet alien pops up and goes, "Oh no." And he would show this clip every time he went on Conan O'Brien's show, including like the last episode of Conan O'Brien's show. And it was always, you know, he would always play it up like, I know I've joked around before, but now, you know, I actually was able to bring in something that And so he would always, you know, do this whole bit, and he would occasionally fool Conan in thinking that he was sincere. But once Conan's television show ended, you know, it was, I guess, Conan O'Brien figured that the whole bit was done.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd went on his podcast, and of course this is, you know, an internet broadcast. This is not, you know, there's no video,
right,
like that they broadcast, although there is video of them doing it, but it's like, it's not something, there's no studio audience, there's no graphics, there's no,
yeah, it's just behind the scenes video kind of deal.
Yeah they don't pull up a screen or anything like that. And so Paul Rudd spends literally 15 minutes talking about this new play that he like co-wrote and is going to do with a like William H. Macy or something like that. I don't know. Yeah, but he goes into this incredibly elaborate, depiction, description of what this play is about and who's in it and what his role is. And then he says, you know, we have some audio from the table read that we did. Would you like to hear it? And Conan says, of course, that sounds great. And then he plays audio from the clip from Mac and Me of the kid. And the entire time Conan's like, you can't do that. That's not how that works. You can't do it. It does not work over a podcast. And he's like complaining the entire time because he was utterly fooled. And it's hilarious. So that's, I recommend, awesome, people check that out. Conan O'Brien, I think, is just really one of the true comedic geniuses of the past like 50 years. He's really been a huge influence on me, I think, as a writer and just my sensibilities as in terms of humor, just in general. But that clip just killed me. All right,
so you and I have a shared love for the early seasons of The Simpsons, and hearing him talk about, you know, being in the room and writing some of those, I always find really interesting. Like when he would have Hank Azaria on the show, or he would have, you know, any of the great longtime voice artists on that show. I always enjoyed those interviews because, you know, he could talk about his experience in the room as well. It was always incredible.
Yeah, no, he's pretty great. And that sequence, I think, just is an example of why. All right, so this is from Alvin, who wants to know, if you had to choose another, like, let's say you're a journalist, you're a beat writer. If you had to choose another sports team to follow, which one would it be? And it doesn't have to be another collegiate team. It could be any team.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would say the one, and I talk about this on the show quite a bit, would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's just because of the stunning Mrs. Vance. I suppose if it was another college team, you know, she's really into West Virginia because she's a West Virginia girl. So maybe I've shared this once or twice before. The other school that I actually applied to attend instead of Ohio State was the University of Southern California. And so there's a part of me that's like, you know, in a Doctor Strange alternate timeline, you know, here somewhere in the multiverse, Andy is a huge fan of USC and
Monaco's got a professional soccer team. That's all I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? Like that, like there are a couple of routes you can go here. You can go the entertainment factor. And for me, that would be the Cleveland Browns, because the entire franchise.
I couldn't do it.
Because I'm not a fan of the Cleveland Browns. So I would have the ultimate, you know, detachment. I would not be invested whatsoever in their success, and I could just enjoy the ridiculousness around it. However, if I'm also going to be covering a team and then living in relative approximation, right, to where they exist, I mean, Paris Saint-Germain, Saint-Germain, whatever you pronounce it in French, you know, like what, like Manchester United, Man City. I feel like there are a lot of really nice options around the world where you could be
so many good EPL, so many good EPL teams you could be. Well, yeah. whether or not
they're Barca, but come on, like I'm gonna live in Spain and then travel around Europe and go to all the fanciest places. Yeah, I think that would be, I would be okay with that. That would be fine.
Be a groupie or whatever the sports ideological equivalent of being a groupie.
Well, no, I'm a professional journalist, Andy. I'm I'm a pro.
That's good. Yeah, I guess that was the context of the question, wasn't it? Yeah, good call. Yeah, good call.
In theory. All right. So this one's from Roger. Do you know if the Buckeyes football games are going to get the full season broadcast live from the other stations now that ABC/ESPN does not have the Big Ten under contract? I would assume that if it's an Ohio State game, it is going to be broadcasted on some – you're not going to get it on – a network television every week, but it's going to be broadcast in some way, in some form every week. I would not worry about that. And that's going to be all part and parcel of the contracts and the deals that they finalize here.
Yeah, totally agree. I think there are a lot of questions yet to be answered about this new rights deal. But will I be able to see the Buckeyes play is not one of them. Not one that I have.
I agree. I you know what though? Here's one thing I'm worried about. I work on alternate Saturdays.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be missing some like games live. It's going to stink. So I'm going to have to like shut it down and then do the DVR thing and then come back. And it's going to be brutal for some of these. So I'm not super pumped about that. All right. This is from Matt in Charlotte. Just returned from the vacation. The one place I know in my head I should hate, but in my heart, I just somehow enjoy the state up north. So this is actually a second trip up north in the last 3 years. But from Charlotte, it's kind of nice to escape the heat and humidity. He basically wants to know, have we been there on vacation? Is there any moral reason to do it? Or is there any cons beside the moral argument? And is there anything special about Mackinac Island besides the fudge?
So I will say we have done a couple of dog shows in Michigan each year, pretty much every year since we've been doing it. There are some, some good shows up there that we like. But that is not the same as like vacationing there. So I have not done any kind of vacation there or spent any kind of really appreciable time, honestly, anywhere. And it's not, I would say Woody Hayes says you shouldn't spend any of your money there. You know, the story about pushing the car across the state line if need be to get gas. Like, it's not even that. Like, I've not said, oh, we're not vacationing in. There's just never been, I guess, a moment where either of us have said, where we should go. It's just not, come up. So
I gotta tell you, man. So my wife and I have done a couple trips to Michigan. We were in Muskegon, not great. Don't recommend. However, the second one we went to Frankfort, Michigan, which is close to Traverse City, and that was a fantastic time. That was really great. I mean, the Lake Michigan by itself, I think it's just beautiful. It is incredible how clean and blue and everything it is. So if you can stay anywhere, I think on the shores of Lake Michigan, that's always a good time. But they had a really nice beach. You go out to a pier where there's a lighthouse. We did some horseback riding in the area. We went to Sleeping Bear Dunes, which is just a few miles to the north, went up that and walked around. That was incredible. And then there's like little towns with all kinds of, like little town charm and restaurants and whatnot. I highly recommend that area, the Frankfort area. It's in the northern mitten, the northwestern part of the mitten. But a lot of people are like all about Traverse City, but I had a great time in Frankfort. So I don't know, man. I wish Lake Erie was a little bit more substantial and a little less polluted, because going to Lake Michigan, I'm like, oh my God, this is pretty great. So yeah, I endorse it. I think it's a good time. And I recommend people check it out if they get the chance, if they want a nice vacation within close proximity. By the way, Andy, Matt heard your dollar bucks and says that I hope you're enjoying season 3 as much as we are.
We are absolutely. And in fact, probably busted out 2, maybe 3 episodes right before I came in to record this week's episode of the Dubcast. Nice. I think, if you haven't, friends, heard me rave about Bluey, the children's television program Bluey, before, go to Disney Plus and just watch it. Just start with season 1 and just binge watch. They're 7-minute vignettes, in essence, about a family of Australian blue and red heeler dogs. So they're anthropomorphic dogs, mom and dad and their 2 daughters. And number 1, they're hilarious. Number 2, like the life lessons, you know, it's one of these, they've done a fantastic job with their Australian humor of making it something that my 9-year-old daughter loves. And that I also find hilarious. There's humor that works for adults and kids, but the little life lessons, like, and some of them are life lessons, I think almost for as much for us adults as they are for the kids. The most recent one I was watching, Grandpa Healer came over and wanted to play with the kids, and the kids were playing restaurant, but everything was done via app, you know, and Grandpa doesn't have a phone. Grandpa doesn't know what an app is. And it's, you know, mm-hmm. kind of, it, and part of it's kind of comical because the kids are like, oh, granddad, you know, cause he doesn't know what an app is or how to use a phone or any of that sort of thing. But it, you know, it kind of, as it goes by, you get the sense, cause they have it set up that, you know, he's staying at an Airbnb. They don't call it Airbnb, but he's staying at an Airbnb that he had to, you know, rent and pay for via his app. And he tries to go to the restaurant. Oh, Grandpa, you don't go to the restaurant. You order on your app. So he orders on his, you know, you have to order on the phone, they say. So he tries to call the restaurant. Well, you can't call. You just have to order on your app. Well, I don't even have the menu. Where's the menu? Oh, it's on the app. And so everything. And so finally, then, you know, they deliver the food to him in their little, you know, kid restaurant game. And he's like, so I just sit here by myself and eat, you know, and they're like, yeah, that's it. And it's a nice little social commentary on how we have really devolved, I think, as a society, through the use of technology, that we don't, you know, like go out and do things outside or with people or whatnot. We just, you know, stay home and do everything via app. And so it's like the kids, I don't know that the 9-year-old watching that picks up on that. She just thinks the whole thing's really hilarious, but I'm watching, I'm like, yeah, you know, Grandpa Healer here's
right on.
Bluey. He's got a point, you know, man yells at cloud. I know, but it's so it's a great show. I absolutely love it. So yes, have absolutely been enjoying, you know, we're a dozen or so episodes into season 3, and I hope Bluey's on forever. It's just amazing.
Nice. All right. Last one here from Nelson, Nelson Broadway. And Nelson wants to know, what past powerhouse football school will make a comeback? Thinking of schools like Miami, Florida, Florida State, maybe Florida, Texas, well, USC, Michigan. What do you think?
It's absolutely not Miami. Ohio State broke Miami.
Yeah, Miami's dead. They're not coming back.
It's not.
That happening. Was, and really, and not just because, you know, it's fun to talk about and to say, it's like Nebraska. There were some inherent, I think, issues. And granted, you're in Florida where you've got a ton of talent and all that stuff. I just think the competition is too fierce. And for me, Miami was one of those like lightning in a bottle things where they had a whole attitude and a certain, you know, administrative push behind it and good coaches and all that. I don't think that they're going to get those things all in a row anytime soon. I think it's going to be a lot more. I think it's going to be less difficult for a Florida State or a Florida to do that than for a Miami right now, I guess, would be my point with that. So yes, I agree with that. Miami, I would say, is not in the cards.
Yeah, it's not going to be Miami. I mean, I would probably be most inclined to say USC. I think the addition of USC to the Big Ten benefits USC quite a lot. Mm-hmm. I think it ups their profile. You know, this new media rights deal we were just talking about a little bit ago is a boon for them. The fact that they're going to be playing teams like Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, et cetera, at least some, you know, now maybe that's that they become the new Wisconsin and just run rush out over the West. I don't know, who knows how that the divisions shake out and all that sort of thing. But that to me is the program that of the ones that were listed that is most likely to make a comeback. I think the additional resources they will put to good use. I feel like that's a program that could be great again.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would say USC is the one just because they've got a lot of inherent advantages in a lot of ways that some of the other places don't. And again, it's not just about talent. I mean, Texas and schools in Florida have a lot of, you know, talent to draw from, but I also think it's just the setup and the competition and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and Texas is a good cautionary tale for USC, right? Because Texas has more money than God. They have access to one of the most fertile recruiting states in the history of man.
Right.
And yet they managed to continually screw it up, partly because of, you know, inept management
and a terrible booster,
right? The influence of their boosters.
Yeah. A terrible booster and coaching and administrative relationship like that, all of that is super toxic. And it's just leading to not good things for a school that should be much better at football.
And USC, you know, so they've not had a great decade in terms of their management. So that's why I say a good cautionary tale for USC is, hey, don't do all the dumb things Texas has done. Hopefully, you know, for them, in the context of this scenario question, they kind of right the ship here and they're making some good moves now. And hey, they're, you know, ranked in the top 15 preseason. So maybe they will be back.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. So that's Ask Us Anything. Thank you for sending those in. Those are excellent questions this week. We definitely appreciate them and we'll keep answering them.
Yeah, great questions for sure. As we wind down the final days of the off season, let's finish up with this one, a little buckshot action. You know, we talked a couple episodes ago about a fun little Twitter. Beef is not the right word because it was absolutely done in fun and not with any animus, but Ohio State's football and basketball team jawing back and forth on social media. It started when Ohio State football players contended that the best five players on their team could take Ohio State's best five basketball players in a game of shooty hoops. And we kind of got a kick out of that. And that was fun and nice little offseason fodder. Well, there was a feud between another football and basketball program in the region last week. The University of Kentucky football and basketball programs had a real feud on social media and in real time, kind of fomented because Coach John Calipari of the basketball team was not too happy that his program hasn't gotten a new practice facility. He said, and I quote, "This is a basketball school. Alabama's a football school. So is Georgia. No disrespect to our football team." By the way, that means what you're about to say is disrespectful. Yeah. "I hope they win 10 games and go to bowls, but this is a basketball school." Mark Stoops, coach of the Kentucky football team, picked up the gauntlet on ye old Twitter and said, "Basketball school, I thought we competed in the SEC, four straight postseason wins." And it kind of went downhill from there. One, are you surprised that you had two multi-million dollar head coaches at the same school bickering like school children on social media for God and everybody to see? And two, who's right here?
Well, I mean, it's not surprising because, you know, these are two petty men who will be petty. So I'm not shocked by that. I don't know. I mean, Kentucky basketball in Kentucky, I don't care how bad Kentucky basketball is or how they are in comparison to Kentucky football. There's no comparison. Kentucky basketball rules that state, and there is no comparison. It is the end all be all of sporting, you know, events in that state outside of like the Derby. It is it. And, you know, my grandma, like, she's native Kentucky and she was never like super into sports besides the Reds. But like the minute somebody said like college basketball, her ears perked up. She's like, how the Wildcats doing? Because that's all she cared about. That's a trump card, no matter, you know, what the conversation is. It's always going to be Kentucky basketball.
Well, and unfortunately for Coach Cal, athletic director Mitch Barnhart stepped in and said the Wildcats are not building a new basketball practice facility anytime soon.
Sorry.
And Cal and Stoops need to hug it out and so on and so forth. He went so far, Barnhart, the AD, that is to say, the grown-ups are going to have to figure it out, be a little better. You know, I think if I'm a head coach and the AD says, you know, the grown-ups are going to have to be a little better, maybe I'm a little embarrassed by my behavior, but good times. It's nice to be able to laugh at other programs
when I agree. You
have that kind of infighting and bickering at your own. So that's where we're going to leave it. Another great episode, my friend, and the football season is almost here. We'll be back next week with a little bit more preview action as September 3rd draws very, very close. Ohio State versus Notre Dame. Get this party started right. Until then, I'm Andy.
I'm Johnny.
Thanks for joining us on the 11 Dubcast.